This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, from time to time here on the Mac Attack, here on CBS Sports Radio, we like to parachute into one of our major markets, one of the big sporting markets around the country. If we've got a nice CBS Sports Radio affiliate there in town, all the better. But we like to, from time to time, get specific about a city that's got major sports implications and teams going well. And I checked the standings. I said, you know, we haven't done a D.C. spot in a while. Caps are going to the playoffs. Wiz are going to the playoffs. Nats are a big favorite in the East. Maybe we'll even sneak in some skin stuff. And I knew our next guest would be able to talk about it all with us because he does it on a day-in, day-out basis on his station down there in D.C., 106.7 The Fan, co-host of the Grant and Danny Show, Grant Paulson from The Fan in Washington, D.C., joins us. Hey, Ben Grant.
Good, Jody Mac. How you doing, buddy?
Appreciate you coming on. I'm doing well. Maybe not as well as your Wizards. I'm going to start there. Prior to the season, when I was looking, all right, if not the Cavs, who in the East could actually be a team to contend with them? And I thought Washington could fall into that category. They're coming limping into the playoffs. I know they've had some injury issues, but they haven't really played all that well, and you can only write so much off to John Wall not being available. He's back now, and they haven't exactly gotten back on stride. What's the problems with the Wizards?
Well, one issue is that, yeah, John Wall's returned, but he's not available to play for them in back-to-back. So if you saw last night a bad loss to Atlanta, he wasn't on the floor for them, and he didn't post, and neither did the rest of the team. And the good news going into the playoffs is that Boston has been their nemesis over the last couple of years, eliminated them in a seventh game on the precipice of a conference final last year, is going to be going into the playoffs without Kyrie Irving. As of right now, Washington, a 7 seed, would play Boston as a 2 seed. That's how it looks like it's going to shape up. And I don't think they fear a Kyrie Irving-less, a Gordon Hayward-less Celtics team. They've beaten them in 2 out of 3 this year, and I think they would welcome that matchup. Toronto is the 1 seed that's going to run away with the East, and I don't know that anybody really worries or fears about the Raptors as good as they've been in the regular year. They've got to prove it in the playoffs. So the hope is that you avoid the Cavs as long as possible. But the problem is the Wizards just aren't playing well. So they can make any case they want to about liking their chances against the down teams in the East or maybe some fool's gold at the top of the conference right now because of some of the way that injuries have happened in the second half of the year. But they're just not playing clean basketball. Their front court with Marcin Gortat in the block has been wildly inconsistent. He's really struggling, showing some age. Markieff Morris, their 4, seems to be better in the playoffs when he's engaged than in the regular year, but his second half has been up and down. And without John Wall, Bradley Beal has certainly had a breakthrough all-star season, but they clearly miss Wall, and now that he's back, they're going to need to get max capacity, 100% of him, night in and night out in the playoffs. And I'm just not sure if he's going to be able to turn it on that quickly to do that, coming off of a fairly serious injury that he was out for 2 months with and getting back into the flow as quickly as he's going to have to now.
And their coach was none too pleased last night. I saw his quotes after the game. Scott Brooks is not a guy who usually is the kind of he's more of a carrot guy than the stick guy, but he went to the stick last night. Will that work with this group?
It better. I think that it will because they have now over the last couple of seasons responded well to him in times of crises. And the Wizards really have been able to hit a switch come the playoffs in a way that a lot of teams in the NBA say they're going to and then haven't. What you saw last night from Scott Brooks was he basically told the media, these guys keep telling you they're going to and they haven't. Where is it? Where's the switch? It's time now. It's been time. I think he's starting to get a little concerned or worried because normally – in the final couple of weeks of the year, they're rounding into form. If you look at their record over the last month, they're going in the opposite direction. They're regressing. But when you hear Beal or Wall or Gortat or Morris, any of the leaders in that locker room talk, or even the young up-and-comers like Kelly Oubre, they all tell you they're going to be fine. They like their chances, as I mentioned, against the top 2 teams in the East. they'd love to go toe-to-toe with the Cavs, who they led by 16 points with 6 minutes left in the game they lost the other night. They're doing a lot of talking. They're very confident. There's a lot of bravado. Beal and Wall, in a co-interview earlier this season, said, you know, they thought that the Cavs basically tried to duck them last year, or were happy that they didn't have to play the Wizards. I mean, it's a lot of hype and talk for a team that has not done a whole lot. But I think what we saw Brooks trying to do was touch the button to say, enough of that. Now it's time. The playoffs are here.
We're talking to Grant Paulson. He does middays on 106.7 The Fan down in D.C., talking D.C. sports. Your other winter team, a little different than the Caps. They have been a Stanley Cup contender going into the postseason. Top contender, as a matter of fact, a team that was picked to get out of the East. As good as they've been in regular seasons, they just haven't been able to put back-to-back playoff series together. Once again, over 100 points and winning the division, not quite going away, but rather handily. Why is this Cap team going to be different than the previous Cap teams over the last several years, over the last several decades, depending on how long you want to take it, that this team just can't seem to get over the hump? Why is this different?
The 11th year out of 12 that the Caps have made the playoffs. Why is this team different? I think this team has to work harder and play harder because they're not as skilled. Now, the previous Caps teams in this, what we call the Rock the Red era in town, generally went into the playoffs as either heavy favorites to come out of the first round, to get to an Eastern Conference final, many times over to get to and win the Cup. Two President's Trophies under Barry Trotz over the last few seasons. He's been in town for 4 years. All four have netted playoff berths and the last three division titles. And twice they've had the most points in the National Hockey League in that time. And they go into the playoffs with everyone anticipating and saying that they're going to be the last team standing. I don't think anyone's saying that right now. If you look at the points this year, they won't finish anywhere near what they've done the last couple of years. The expectation coming into the year, even in town, from people who follow them as closely as I do every night on TV here locally on NBC Sports Washington, I didn't have them winning the Metro. I thought they'd make the playoffs. I thought they'd make a couple moves at the deadline if they had to get one of those wild card spots. But they won one of the most competitive top-to-bottom divisions in the sport. They've won some key games late in the year against hungry teams like the Penguins, who have won two recent Cups, who's been an Achilles heel type club for them. They've played the Western Conference in the second half of the year, some of those higher-end teams pretty well as well. As far as the differences this year, they've got a hot goaltender going into the playoffs that they go with Philip Grubauer, who's been dominant. He's got the best numbers in the league since right around Thanksgiving. I think that's going to help them. Their defense is not as deep on paper as it was last year, but last season they just traded for Kevin Shattenkirk, now in New York, who didn't have a good playoffs. Carl Alsner was, I think, more important in name than in performance, didn't have an excellent postseason, was hurt. This year they've made a couple of trades for back-end guys. Michael Kempney scored a goal tonight. Jacob Yarabek's played well for them. So they're six deep there on the defensive end, which is going to help. And they've got some depth, balanced scoring. Their second-best player on the organization, Evgeny Kuznetsov, he comes into the playoffs, one of the hottest players in the NHL, has been the first star in the sport for an entire month this year. He's an ultra-upside guy who hasn't been great in the playoffs. I'm anticipating that he's going to give them more this year than they've gotten out of him. And I think if that's the case, then he and Ovechkin and Backstrom and TJ Oshie are going to give you enough offensive production to potentially go on a little bit of a run if you can get the goaltending that has eluded them the last couple of second rounds.
One quick aside, because I know how big a hockey guy you are, non-cap related. Who's the MVP? Who's going to win the Hart Trophy in the NHL this year?
It's a great question. For me, there's a handful of options. You know, the guy that I actually thought should have won it and think should, a lot of people don't necessarily agree with. But despite the way they finished the year, I would go Nikita Kucherov. I know that he's got a lot of help and there's plenty of talent on that team. But start to finish, I've seen Tampa Bay up close and personal this year. We've seen what they've done here in Washington. I think he is a guy that you got to plan for at all times. You got to know where he is on the ice. He's as good a player as there is on a great team in hockey. There are some excellent talents on non-contending teams and or teams that aren't quite as good.
Yeah, McDavid's the best player in the league, but is he going to win when Edmonton doesn't get close?
Not even close, right? So, and I have no problem with giving that award to guys that don't contend, but at that point, just name it the most outstanding player. We have that debate
right
all the time.
Sure.
I think it's got to go to a guy who's made a good team great, and I think he's done that.
Grant Paulson from the fan down in D.C., our guest. All right, on to baseball, which I know is your other love. Nats won the division going away last year. Looked to be a heavy favorite in the NL East again this season. But at least here in the first week and a half, the Mets have jumped up and said, not so fast, my friends, and gotten off to a pretty good start, including beating the Nats these last 2 days. Nats missing Daniel Murphy in the middle of that lineup. Just, hey, the Mets got off to a good start. We're not sweating at all here in D.C. Why have they kind of walked out of the gates here at 4-4?
Well, Tony Mac, I'd say this. They were 4-0, and they've lost four straight since. So you had really a phenomenal first handful of days where everything that could go right did. They got masterpieces one after another, four straight quality starts. Their rotation ERA was sub 2 through one trip with Strasburg and Scherzer and Gio Gonzalez and Tanner Roark. Their horses all really throwing the ball well. In this four-game losing streak now, Scherzer gave up a three-run homer with a performance where he only gave up one run that was earned, had a bad defensive play behind him, and had a crooked number inning that cost him on a day where they didn't hit much. Strasburg was uncharacteristically off in their home opener against the Mets. You give them a lot of credit. They had a late grand slam with Jay Bruce at the plate against Brandon Kintzer, who doesn't get the ball down in the zone like he has to and gives up a long fly ball. So it's been a couple of kind of fluke little things that have taken place. I actually think this is probably the best thing that could have happened to them. They had a pretty loose spring training under Dave Martinez. They know how good they are. They've talked about, quote unquote, getting over the hump this year. The hump for them is the first round of the playoffs. But you got to get to the playoffs first. You know, you don't get to roll the baseball out and win 95 games. They are without Daniel Murphy. Ryan Zimmerman hasn't hit yet. Michael Taylor is 2 for the season at this point offensively. They're starting center fielder. Their bench is being stretched a little bit thin, A, because of the Murphy injury. Adam Eaton is coming off of an injury. While he's been the best player in the National League so far this year, he's left a couple of games hobbled already. Looks like he's going to be okay. But additionally, they've had ejections now in a couple of straight games with key infielders. Trey Turner, their starting shortstop. Anthony Rendon, their third baseman today. Martinez actually got run trying to protect him at the plate. So there's a little frustration, but I think this is good for this reason. The Mets are going to be good this year. I thought they were absolutely a wild card contender type, somewhere around 90 wins, with the Nats somewhere in that 95 to 97 range. If they stay healthy as a pitching staff and Max makes 30 starts and Harvey makes 28, 29 starts and Syndergaard and DeGrom are both healthy, there's no reason to believe that's not a playoff team. They went to the World Series a couple of years ago when all those guys were getting the ball every fifth day. And their lineup's very good, and Cespedes and Bruce are back. So I think it's a good little wake-up call. It's only 8 games. No one in that clubhouse is the least bit concerned. I think they know that they are really good, and they got 6 months to figure this thing out.
When is Murphy going to be back?
I say early May. I think it's going to be a few weeks from now. He is running around. Saw him at the ballpark playing a little soccer, moving around laterally better than I thought, Jody Mack. You know this. I mean, it's hard when you're on flat ground to start cutting and doing some of those things, and he's starting to do that coming off that microfracture surgery. But I think it's probably going to be a few more weeks. You got to get him doing baseball activities. You probably got to let him rehab a couple of days in some of the cold weather games before you get him back to Nats Park. But I would say I'd be shocked if he's not in the lineup a month from now. I think it'll be closer to 3 weeks from now.
Fair enough. Last Nats question. You mentioned Eaton off to the great start. Harper not too bad himself. 5 homers, 10 RBIs. Is it just like the pink elephant in the room that nobody asks the question, nobody deals with the question? Is this guy staying or is he going? Are we seeing the last of Bryce Harper? How do the fans and the media and the guys on the team deal with the fact that Bryce Harper's a free agent at the end of this year?
Well, he's made it a lot easier for the guys on the team to not have to deal with it by him saying, don't ask me any questions about it. Now, I guess theoretically they could be asked questions about it, but the tone they've taken is to echo his sentiments. Bryce doesn't want us speaking about that. It's not something we're going to cover. So that's kind of the way they're talking about it locally. And I think by now, enough of those stories have been written, enough of the conversations taken place, that at least until maybe the stretch run of the year, the final month of the season, there's not a lot of overturning that stone again that needs to be done. What I'm curious about is as he travels around on road games and road trips, you shouldn't play by those rules if you're visiting media. You get one crack at them all season. Now, they don't play by those rules in major markets like New York and Boston and Los Angeles. So he's going to get questions, and he better comport himself pretty well. You don't want to see him walking out of press conferences or walking away from his stall when he's got 30 reporters around. And my guess is he will. He's always done a good job handling the brightest spotlight in Major League Baseball as the most sought after and talked about player in this sport, really, since, he was 16 years old on Sports Illustrated. I think he's gone after this year, to answer your question, though. I've thought that for a while. I would be surprised if he's back. What I think the Nationals will do is they'll use the money they could use to sign him to extend both Anthony Rendon, who led the National League in WAR at third base last year and is one of the most underrated players in the sport, and Trey Turner, their shortstop they acquired via trade from San Diego, who's turned himself into a really good young talent at an important position up the middle. You could probably get both of those guys done for the same money you could lock up Bryce Harper for. That, I think, would be their plan. They've got an elite-level prospect named Victor Robles they'll plug in center field next year. They can kick Eaton back over to right and either start Michael Taylor or another veteran major leaguer in left field. But I think that would be plan A, unless the money comes down substantial enough in a second straight year where teams aren't spending the same, that he comes back into the ballpark that they feel like they can spend in. I'm not anticipating that. I think he's a special case, and he'll get special money.
All right, and last thing, we ran a little long, so I got time for one Redskin question. I won't ask you what player they're going to take in the first round of the draft, but just give me a nice little composite of positionally what they're looking for, what they'd like to do, even if you don't have a specific name, which is kind of hard since you don't know who's taken before you actually get onto the clock.
Yeah, Jody, I think what they're going to do is they're going to take the best available defensive impact player they can who falls out of the top 12. They feel like they got a pretty good catbird seat right now at 13. There's going to be four quarterbacks going in the top six picks, it looks like. And if that's the case, the numbers start setting up really nicely that one of the defenders that they love is going to fall out of the top dozen. Is that Derwin James, the safety from Florida State, Roquan Smith, the inside linebacker from Georgia, 350-pound athletic nose tackle, Vita Vea, space eater from Washington who commands double teams. That's a guy that I think will be available for them if they want him. And then there might be a corner. You know, maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick stuns everyone and is still there because you're going to get someone to move up. Maybe you could get a fifth quarterback to go. The receivers are still on the board. Maybe at 9 or 10, someone comes into that top 10 to grab, you know, one of the best 10 players in the draft that shouldn't be there. You figure Quentin Nelson's going to go somewhere. I would think that Darius Geis is an option for the Redskins at 13 if they don't go defense, but my guess is he goes in that 11-12 range, somewhere around there. So I think if I had to give you a name right now, I would say either Derwin James or Vita Vea are the two most likely options there for them. If Minkah Fitzpatrick is available, they'll run that card up to the podium, in my opinion. But they're just looking for a defensive contributor. They don't have enough horses. They don't have enough stalwarts that are Pro Bowl-type talents on that side of the ball, and they've ranked 28th in the league over the last couple of years. They got to help Alex Smith out if he's going to do anything here like he did in Kansas City.
GP, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for the great insight across the D.C. board. We'll talk again soon.
My pleasure, Jody. Thank you, buddy. You're the best.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.